You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Everybody, and welcome to the Paranormal Portal Podcast. I'm your host, Brent Thomas. Hope you guys are all doing amazing out there. Thank you for joining us here on the Paranormal Portal. We are always doing podcasts three times a week, so make sure you're subscribed wherever you're listening from so that you get every new podcast as it comes out. If you have an experience of your very own and you'd love to share it or to be a guest on the show, I'd love to hear from you. So email us at paranormalportalradio@gmail.com. Today, we got a great show lined up for you guys. We are going to be welcoming Dawn from Northern California, who has a profound out-of-body experience that she's going to be sharing with us here on the show. So I hope you guys are all ready because we're going in. Welcome to the show, Dawn. How you doing, and how's things in Northern California?
Thank you, Brett, for having me on your show. Things are good here. It's raining, which we really need. It's all good. And again, thank you for having me on your show. I'm excited to be able to share my experience.
Yeah, I'm thrilled that you came on, and I'll tell you, it's one thing to receive a story, but it's another thing to have a discussion, and I really prefer doing it this way, and thank you for agreeing to do this with me, because it becomes a conversation, and the dialogue always evolves so much more than a written story would, so thank you again. But can you kind of tell us where all this started for you? Where did this journey begin?
It actually began leading up to the actual out-of-body, or some have called it a near-death, although I was never, I was never actually in the throes of losing my life. But it was in 1987, and I had been diagnosed with a severe sinus infection that I'd been battling for about 10 months, almost a year prior.
Wow.
And I ended up getting referred to an ear, nose, and throat specialist, and I went to see her, and she said, "This is not going to clear up." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Oh, okay, so what do we do?" I had two young children at the time. My son was 4, my daughter was 3, and I said, "What do I do?" And she said, "Well, you need surgery." And I was terrified of surgery.
Mm-hmm.
My dad had a sister who had been in a dentist chair and literally died. It wasn't even general anesthesia. It was just like a twilight type anesthesia. And she just died. Her heart stopped.
Oh my God.
And so when she told me this, I was terrified.
Yeah.
And she said, but the reason was, is because the sinus passage on that side mm-hmm. was so narrow that it was never going to clear up. And it had been compounded by a root canal that failed 10 months prior.
Oh, no.
It was an endodontist, just not very, very skilled.
Mm-hmm.
He punctured the end of the root and put, I guess there was additional infection that went into the left maxillary sinus. And it was not going to clear up. And so at this point, I was just, you know, I was a wreck. Mm-hmm. And it was also compounded by the fact that about a year after my daughter was born, I started having some very strange symptoms. I was having anxiety attacks, full-blown panic attacks,
wow.
out of the blue.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it would wake me up. I would wake up and I would just be literally trembling and shaking. And I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And it scared me. It scared me a lot. And I'm thinking, I don't know why this is even happening to me. And it wasn't until it started being accompanied by an irregular heartbeat. And then I got really concerned. And it's like, oh my gosh, there's something majorly going on in my body. And I went to the doctor. They referred me to a cardiologist. They said it's a, you know, premature ventricular contractions. And we don't know why it's happening, but we're going to do all the cardiac tests.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, yes, please do, because, you know, I'm 28 years old and this shouldn't be happening.
Right.
So they did all the cardiac tests, the echocardiograms, everything. And they came back and said, we can't find anything wrong with your heart. And one cardiologist did say in passing, he said, you know, your thyroid levels are a little off, but we're going to make sure there's nothing wrong with your heart. And that's exactly what they did. They confirmed there was literally nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, so we're going to call it a benign electromechanical cardiac dysfunction.
Okay.
And I said, okay. And they prescribed beta blockers to slow the heart rate a little bit.
Uh-huh.
They prescribed Xanax for the panic, which I hated taking.
Right.
And they said, here's a referral to a psychologist because there must be something going on, and don't drink any caffeine. And so they sent me on my way, and I was like thinking, oh my gosh. So this preceded this whole episode trying to save this tooth and having the root get punctured and all that.
Oh, no.
So now fast forward, we're, you know, late February, early March of 1987, and I'm a basket case. The anxiety is like through the roof, and I'm thinking, okay, I've already got this heart thing going on that they can't figure out, and now I have to have, you know, a surgery, general anesthesia. I'm probably going to die on the table.
Aww.
And that really scared me because I had, you know, my two kids, my little kids. And then the other thought was, oh my gosh, if I die on the table, am I going to hell?
Oh, sure.
And that came from being raised in a Catholic convent school.
Oh, man.
I was sent to Catholic school. And it was a convent school because there was an entire order of nuns that actually ran the school. And they used to board students. By the time I got into first grade, there they had stopped boarding.
Good, okay.
Which was probably a good thing, or I'd been put there.
Yeah.
But still in all, back then, having, you know, the nuns and the priests actually teaching the students, I mean, they were not skilled as teachers. They were skilled in being Catholic. And
sure.
So we were told that God has a blackboard, just like in the classroom. He has a blackboard, and he has everybody's name on it. And every time you do anything wrong, anytime you step out of line, there's a check mark. And once the check marks fill up the entire board for that particular person, you're automatically destined for hell, and you can't get out of it.
Wow, that's so horrible.
That's what they told us.
Oh, no.
And I remember being absolutely terrified, thinking, oh my gosh, this is going to happen to me. Well, having left Catholic school, I kind of really tried to distance myself and not think about it. And for the most part, I could, as an a logical adult, I could say, well, they use this as a tool to control the kids.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. On a logical level, yeah, I could get that. But now that I'm facing this surgery, I'm thinking, holy cow, what if they're right? What if, all my check marks have been completed and now something happens on the table? And, it was just this catastrophic anxiety thinking. And so I was a mess. One particular day before the surgery, actually had predated the surgery by about a month mm-hmm. or so. I had particularly had a bad day. The anxiety was just over the top.
Right.
And incidentally, I'll just give a side note here. That anxiety was actually a very complicated thyroid condition that has a paranormal twist to it. The way that it was found, I had a massive grapefruit-sized goiter that was actually in my chest.
Oh, my God.
That they didn't know about. Oh. And it wasn't discovered until somebody rear-ended me on the freeway. So, different story. But I didn't know that this was going on. So I'd had this particularly bad day, a lot of anxiety. And I remember standing in the living room of my house and looking out the window and thinking, oh my gosh, what is wrong with me?
Right.
And I thought, I'm going to walk out and get the mail. Walked outside, got the mail, and in it was a flyer for a local church.
Mm-hmm.
And it was coming up on the holidays, so it was like late fall, early winter, and it was coming up on the holidays, and they had all their holiday programs, but there was also this little square that said there was a women's Bible study.
Okay.
And that they were accepting new people. And I thought, oh my gosh, if I could just get some support, maybe I can deal with life.
Right.
So I contacted the gal, joined the group, started going, and it was very different because it was non-denominational. And so they didn't have the, God has a blackboard and he's going to check off your name until you go to hell type of thing. And so I started kind of learning that, okay, this whole theology, the Catholicism, this is not what I'm dealing with. These people actually believe in a God.
Mm-hmm.
It was a bit dogmatic as far as, you have to be specific Bible believing, but I thought, I can probably do this.
Sure.
I can avail myself of the support. So I did. And so when I started facing, the surgery and how I was going to make that work, I'm thinking, I'm just going to pray. I'm going to pray that I'm comforted enough to actually go through with the surgery because I need it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to pray that my kids are fine. If in the event that I do die on the table. And so that's what I did. And it gets to be the day of the surgery, and I'm super nervous.
Right.
But at the same time, I have this sense of calm that, it's going to be fine. And so I remember being in the surgery room, and the anesthesiologist says, okay, we're going to give you a shot to relax you, and then, I'm going to have you start counting backwards. I don't know why they do that, the backwards counting thing. I don't
sure.
know. But anyway, that was kind of the last thing I remember is that I'm counting backwards. I feel relaxed. Everything's fine. And then I'm in a tunnel. And it's not black.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't necessarily have like walls to it. It's not like there's a firmness to it, but it's definitely a tunnel. I don't feel like I'm in there with anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
I feel very light. And so I start moving through it and I can see this bright, we're talking really bright light. It's brighter than the brightest day ever with full sun. It's mm-hmm. Tons brighter than that.
Wow.
And I start walking towards it. It's just almost reflexive. It's like, oh, this is normal. You walk to it. I wasn't walking. It was like floating. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm moving towards it through this tunnel. And when I get there, I go right into it. And again, it's very reflexive. It's very familiar. It's like, this is what we're supposed to do. Let's just go into it. And so I stepped into it without hesitation.
Uh-huh.
And once I was on the other side of it, I'm in a outside field type area. And it's almost indescribable because it was so bright. Thousands of suns could not make it. I mean, they wouldn't even be able to be that bright.
Wow. That's about amazing.
Yeah, everything was, and the crispness of everything, the plants, the trees, the colors. There were colors there that we don't have here. And
wow.
I don't know how to even describe that. There were, and I can't actually remember, I could never be able to describe what it looked like because the colors don't exist on this side.
Oh, that's incredible.
It was amazing. And so I'm standing there and I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is real. This is the real world.
Mm-hmm.
Not what we live in. What we live in is kind of real, but it's not like that.
Right.
And so as I'm standing there, this man approaches me, and average, very average. But he's so happy. And I knew it was, quote, Jesus.
Oh, nice. Okay.
But at the same time, I also knew that he could be whoever the person needed him to be. Now, I know that sounds really weird, and I don't even know how to really describe that, but he was Jesus. But if somebody needed him to be something different, he would have been.
Oh, cool.
He was average height and weight, dark pants, kind of a roughly woven light-colored shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have long hair. It was kind of short-ish, but it was dark. Had a dark kind of trimmed beard, just an average person. But his eyes were green. And now, when I looked at that, I was thinking, huh, you know, I have green eyes. So I'm thinking, oh, maybe that's... Yeah, I didn't know. I just noticed that. But his smile, he had a smile that was like, spoke everything.
Wow.
Extremely happy, jovial, just joyous, unbelievable. And so there was no verbal words exchanged at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew that telepathically we were communicating, and it was like, let's start walking. Okay, cool, let's start walking.
Uh-huh.
So we're walking in this field area and just looking at the trees, the plants, the shrubs, it was just like breathtaking. And all of a sudden I stopped and I said, because I had a question and I wanted to actually verbalize it. And I stopped and he stopped and we faced each other, and I actually verbalized the words, how do you do a life? And he started chuckling and almost laughing, smiling, and he brought his hands up to his chest, like you know how you see, you know, little kids that are in prayer and they've got their hands together, palms together.
Sure.
He brought his hands up in that way. And then he spread them out from like his waist in a horizontal arc to his sides. And as he did that, he said, it's so simple, like this. And he did the gesture. And in that second, every question I had ever had in my life, it makes me emotional to even...
Yeah, wow.
To even say it. But every question I had in my life, I had the answer.
Hmm.
And it was so simple. It was like there was full knowledge.
That's amazing.
And he was laughing. He was just not laughing, but I mean, chuckling and giggling at this point.
Yeah, just jovial, huh?
Yes. And he was doing this because he could see the impact. I think he could see the impact it was having on me.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, I just started laughing. It was like, oh my gosh, it's so simple. How do we not know this? Mm-hmm. And I think the initial feeling that flowed over me was one of relief. And when I look back on that, the relief was the fact that all of the stress, worry, upset that we deal with now, it's not even on the radar there. Sure. It's like it's all for nothing.
Yes.
We go through these things, this stress and worry and striving, and it doesn't matter. None of it matters. And it was like when that realization hit me, the sense of relief was just overwhelming. And I was happy. I felt like, oh my gosh, my life has always had purpose. It always will have purpose. And what we deal with back there, it's just so temporary. It's just like the blink of an eye, you know? And so we continued walking, and it was kind of like small talk at this point. Mm-hmm. And then there came a point where I knew I was supposed to go back, and I was fine with that. I was like, okay, you know, that was the intention. I had the thought of my children. It's like, you know, I need to be there for my kids. And there was never really a question like, I want to stay. That was never, that was never the intent. Mm-hmm. And so I go back, I step or float or whatever into this dark tunnel, and I start going back down. And he's just, you know, he's standing at the sort of the entrance of it, and he's watching me do this. And I get about, I don't know, I'm thinking halfway down. Mm-hmm. And my hearing came back, my physical ears, my hearing came back. And I could hear the nurses talking. And one of them said, I do not know why she will not respond. She's just not responding. And I remember thinking, I was trying to say, I'm here, I'm right here, I'm here. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't. And so, and then they kept talking, and the other nurse had asked her, well, you know, it's just, you know, have you taken her vitals again or whatever? And they did say something about, well, she has vitals. I don't know why. And so I went a little further, and I got my eyesight back, and I could tell that I was in a really brightly lit room. Mm-hmm. But my eyes were still shut, but I could tell that the room was bright. But I still couldn't respond. And then it was like I slipped back into my body with like this hard thud. It was just like, boom, I'm there. And there was a heaviness, and the pain from the surgery hit me. Oh. And I tried to back up. I thought, I am not going to deal with this. I can't. It's too much. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't go back. It almost felt like, you know, he was there nudging me forward. No, you know, you're supposed to go back.
Right.
And so I thought, oh my gosh, I've got to endure this. And so then all of a sudden, one of the nurses said, oh my gosh, there you are. And my first words to her were, am I on Earth? And she said, of course you're on Earth. Where would you be? And I said, I have all the answers. And she's like, and I said, but I hurt so bad. I mean, the pain was so intense. And she goes, yeah, I bet you have all the, can we get some pain medication over here? Mm-hmm. And so, and I was still, my sinuses were still bleeding from the surgery. So she puts this towel on my face. And I'm trying to tell her, I have the answers. I have all the answers. Mm-hmm. And she's like, yeah, okay, right, okay, sure you do.
Yeah.
And telepathically, I could hear him chuckling. It's almost like I could hear him say, you're not going to remember. You're not going to remember. And so they gave me some pain medication, which made me really sick. I don't tolerate pain medication well at all. Mm-hmm. And they got me to my room, and you know, I needed the pain medication because the pain was blinding. Sure. But you know, I started vomiting and I just couldn't stop, and it was miserable. And I couldn't sleep because I was so sick, and they were keeping me overnight. And I did ask the nurse. It was funny because when she said, "There you are, you know, we just couldn't get you back." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Well, how long was I gone?" She goes, "Hours."
Wow.
And that surprised me, because I asked her later. I said, "Well, once somebody's out of surgery, how long does it take them to revive, to come back?" She goes, "Once the medication, the anesthesia is stopped, usually 15 minutes." She goes, "You've been gone like 4 hours. We just couldn't bring you back."
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, "Well, I wasn't there." And she just looked at me like, "Yeah, okay, whatever." So I thought that was pretty interesting. And so I'm in my room, and I'm exhausted, and the pain has subsided, you know, a little bit with the medication. I think they gave me some anti-nausea medication. I was able to finally relax enough to fall asleep.
Mm-hmm.
So this is still the first day, and so I fall asleep, and here I am going back down this tunnel. Uh-huh. And I'm like, okay. So I'm going back down the tunnel. I get to the light, the bright light.
Okay. So hold on just a second, Dawn, because I think right now we need to take a break. So we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with more of this amazing experiences of Dawn from North California. And we'll be right back in just a couple minutes. Hey guys, Brent Thomas here, the Paranormal Portal Podcast. We just wanted to take a moment to introduce you to the Paranormal Portal Store. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, leggings, stickers, mugs, you name it, you might find it over there. So head on over to teespring.com/stores/paranormal-portal, and you too can help fund the Paranormal Portal Podcast. Thank you so much for all that you do, and thank you for being a part of our Paranormal Portal family. Everybody, we are back and back at it with Dawn, who is here on the show, our special guest today, sharing with us her incredible experiences out of body, very much like NDEs. It's very incredible. I don't think I've ever heard anybody have encounters like this with an out of body experience. And I say out of body versus a near death experience, because what she experiences is near death experience material, but she was never without her vitals. So it's really an incredible bunch of experiences. And I'm just thrilled you're here and sharing them with us. So I'm sorry we had to interrupt you quickly for that quick break, but you were having a second one now.
I was.
Wow.
I'm spending the night in the hospital from the surgery. And when I finally am able to fall asleep, I'm going back down the tunnel. And I see the light. And it's the same as before. I, without hesitation, step into it. And this person, I'm going to say it's Jesus for me.
Mm-hmm.
If it was someone else, could have been somebody else. He's there. And we continue walking, just like we had. And he's expounding on my life as an example, because when I've asked him the question, how do you do a life, he's using my life as an example from the perspective of a non-human perspective, I guess. He's giving me his perspective of a life and all the meaning behind it, and all of the reasons we have experiences here. Mm-hmm. And so it just continues. Now, the hard part is I can't remember any of those details. I just know that that's what was happening.
Right.
And so we continued on. It picked up almost like hitting pause. We picked up right where we had left off from the time before.
Mm-hmm.
And when it was time for me to go back, it was the same thing. I went back into the tunnel, and hearing came back, sight came back, and then with a thud, I'm back in my body.
Mm-hmm.
And now it was morning. It was really early morning. And I went home that day. And so I thought, I didn't know what to think of this experience. And I remember I was extremely hesitant to say anything to anybody. My husband at the time, I didn't even say anything to him. I thought, I'm going to look like I've lost my mind here.
Right, right.
And so I said nothing. And so now I'm back home. Kids are happy to see me. Everything's fine. I'm having trouble dealing with the pain. And the medication is causing a lot of nausea, so that's a struggle. I finally am able to sleep when it comes early evening, and the same experience again. I fall asleep, I go through the tunnel, into the light, he's there, we pick up right almost the next sentence where we left off the time before.
This is incredible. Wow.
It was mind blowing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so clear. It was so real. More real than anything we experience on this earth. I can say that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So we're walking, and this time it's a little bit different, and he tells me, and this again is all telepathic, he's telling me that he wants me to pick a number. And I don't know the significance of why. I knew why I was picking something.
Okay.
But I don't know. I don't remember exactly why I was supposed to pick this number. And I could visualize or see this grid. It almost looked like an Excel spreadsheet. And which is kind of funny because I'm actually an accountant.
Mm-hmm.
Accounting specialist. I work with Excel spreadsheets all the time. I wasn't at that point. This was before there was, you know, a lot of computing type applications, but that's what it was similar to.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm looking and I see the number 5 but I know that that's not my number for whatever reason. And so then I see the number 9, and I'm like, that's it. It's 9. And so I pick the number 9, and I say that, you know, I'm picking 9. And at this point, he was there in my presence, but I could also tell that there were, I don't know if they were departed souls, if they were departed loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
There was never a face. There was never any identifying features, but there were beings that were in the periphery. And for whatever reason, what I was picking was very important to them. It impacted them somehow, and I don't know why.
Wow.
So I picked 9, and it was related to me that 9 was the best choice I could make. Not that there were any wrong choices. There was never any wrong choices. Any number would have been a good choice. 9 was the best choice. Again, I don't know why, but that it was going to be a choice that would be difficult to maneuver once I was back in my body. And I don't know why that was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I picked 9. 9 was good. And so we continued communicating somewhat. And then again, it was time for me to head back, and I'm going, same thing, in the tunnel, hearing comes back, eyesight. This time when I slipped back into my body with like this thud, I was in my own bed. Mm. And my then husband was there, and I thought, oh my gosh, what if one of the kids had come in to try to wake mommy up, or what if he had...
Yeah.
woken me. Would they have thought I was like in a coma or something? Mm-hmm. Would they have called 911? How would I explain that? It just kind of, it was a weird thing. So I'm back and I'm thinking, okay, I don't know why this is happening, but it is. And again, I don't want to say anything to anybody. And I get through the day with the pain medication, the nausea, you know, I'm feeling like, gosh, this surgery is not going to heal. I did find out later from a cousin that was an RN. She was a surgical RN. And she said, you know what they did while you're experiencing such a great deal of pain? She goes, you know how they were able to do that surgery, which was called a Caldwell Luck procedure. And it's where they actually make a new sinus passage. And she said, you know what they do, don't you? The primary tool they use to do that, right? And I'm like, well, no, I don't. Mm-hmm. And she said, they use a chisel on your skull.
Oh, geez.
And wow. She said, so that is why you're having so much pain.
Oh, no.
And I was like, oh, my gosh. So anyway, I managed to get through the day. Night comes. I'm able to sleep. And once again, this experience happens. And this is the last time. So I go through the tunnel, you know, hearing leaves, or no, the eyesight leaves. I leave my body, eyesight leaves, hearing leaves, and then I'm at the light, go into the light. He's there. We continue on. It's shorter this time.
Hmm.
And we haven't gone very far. And then he stopped. And I stopped and I looked at him and I could look into his face, even though the joy and the happiness was there. I just knew he was trying to tell me something. And I verbalized again. I said, this is the last time, isn't it? And he started chuckling. He said, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is the part that just, it just,
it's okay. Take your time.
He said it is, and he was smiling.
Mm.
And he said, but you have been comforted.
You've been what? I'm sorry?
He said, you have been comforted.
Mm.
And that was my original prayer, was that I would have comfort in facing the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And those were the words. And it was so profound because I thought, this experience was for me. This was just for me. And the beginning of it, or the thing that brought it about, was the prayer for comfort. And that's exactly was the basis of it. Although it's become huge, you know, there was just the implications of everything I saw, of everything I was given, the picking the number, all of it was so much bigger. But that was, that's what started the ball rolling, was me praying for comfort. And I'll get into that in just a second, and how it's very long reaching.
Mm-hmm.
So I know I'm, you know, I didn't want to leave, but I knew it was my journey to leave and to be with my kids and my family. I knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't like really want to stay. I've listened to other near-death experiences where people really want to stay. It's like, you know, I want to leave behind the pain of the world and I want to stay here. Right. It wasn't like that. It was like I wanted to be a part of it, but I knew that, you know, the time would come,
mm-hmm.
that it would be enough time. So I went back the same way, and I never had that experience again at all. I didn't talk about it for a long time. It was, I don't know, maybe a year,
mm-hmm.
or so. And then it was like, I felt like I really wanted to tell somebody. The group that I was in, this women's study group that was advertised on this flyer for this church,
mm-hmm.
I thought, do I even dare say anything to these people? Do I say anything?
Right.
And because I had a feeling that I would be met with a lot of adversity.
Right.
And so I didn't tell the group as a group, but I would tell a couple of people that, you know, I felt like, oh, maybe, you know, I could try. And some people just were flat out, oh my gosh, you know, you've had an experience that's evil. You know, you encountered a demon. And I'm like, oh, I don't think so. Yeah. I said, I don't think that's what it was. Oh, that's exactly what it is, because, you know, and they would go through and they'd quote all this scripture out of the Bible. And I'd say, well, you know what? I don't buy that.
Good for you.
And then other women would just kind of look at me like, oh yeah, you're nuts or whatever. And they wouldn't really say anything, because they were just, you know, they were like trying to be polite, I guess. And, mm-hmm. but you know, they didn't really engage in conversation with me too much after that. And yeah. I found that people that were not part of this Christian community, they would listen. They would hear it. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of people that were part of this Christian community, and they would listen, and they'd be like, well, that's really fascinating. I wonder how that, you know, where is that in Scripture? They'd always want to find it. Mm-hmm. They'd always want to find the reason to say, well, okay, this was okay. And so I actually decided that if that's really what they want, then possibly there is going to be a way to find a scripture that will let them know that this isn't evil like they think,
right,
but that it's possibly something good.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well, there's got to be something. And there is. There is a scripture. I can't remember if it's 1 Corinthians 13:12 or 12:13, but there is something, and it does say something to the effect of, for now we see as though in a mirror dimly, but then we will see face to face, and we will fully know as we are fully known, something to that effect.
Wow. That's awesome.
And
that's beautiful.
Yeah, it was a scripture that said, you know, we don't have full knowledge now, and we can't know everything now, but we will. Someday there will be full knowledge, and we will know as we are fully known.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say this to people. I'd say, well, look here, you know, why wasn't I in that space? Why wasn't I in that place where there is full knowledge? And they're like, well, I don't know, but, you know, I'm sure that's not what that means. And I said, well, no, I kind of think it is what that means. And so I kind of left it at that. And I ended up over time moving away from that type of theology.
Sure.
I actually spent, I mean, for a lot of years, I spent studying Christian theology. I really did. I spent probably the next 20 years studying in depth. I took seminary courses. I took so many seminary courses that I ended up becoming ordained, believe it or not. I love to research. I love to study. And I ended up getting to the point where I studied so deeply and going back so far into like the original writings, where do we get them, how many do we have, when were they written, et cetera, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
that I came to the conclusion that I cannot subscribe to this dogmatic belief system. I can't.
Sure.
It's not right. And I ended up getting to the point where I summed it up. This is what I believe. If God, and in parentheses S, if God, gods, universe, energy, spirit, creative force, is small enough to be fully understood by the minds of incarnate humans occupying a small amount of time in each life on a single planet in the vast cosmos, then he, she, they, or it is not big enough to be God.
Right.
That's my religion in a nutshell now. It has to be.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I didn't mention, but that was so profound. When I was in the surgical recovery room and I'm waking up, mm-hmm. I remember, it was very brightly lit, and I remember looking around and thinking, oh my God, we live in this. We live in this. And this is like walking around in a fog. It's like walking around in a muddy pond. There's no clarity at all. We don't even know the next step. We don't know the next step to take because we can't see. We can't even see in front of us. Mm-hmm. That's how it felt compared to where I was.
Sure.
And I remember that kind of scared me. It's like, oh my gosh, no wonder we're groping around and we're confused and we're anxious and all of it because we have no clarity whatsoever. And it kind of made me sad. It's like, I thought, well, why are we here then? What are we doing? And I've since come to have a belief in why we are here and what we are doing. But I remember initially I thought, this is so sad. This is what we deal with every single day. Mm-hmm. And so it was very profound. And how this kind of wrapped up was years and years later. In fact, it was like in 2012 or 13. There my husband, who was the father of my kids, we divorced in 99, and I had ended up remarrying. And we were watching this show. My new husband and I were watching this show mm-hmm. on TV, and it was kind of a documentary, and it was featuring an artist, and it was this young gal. I had never heard of her before, and I don't even know how to pronounce her name. A Kane Kramerick, I think. And she was a prodigal child. She was this artist and had started drawing and painting, I guess, when she was very, very young. Mm-hmm. She was born in July of 94, I believe. And they were featuring some of her paintings. It was an interesting documentary. And all of a sudden, they put like her most famous painting on the screen. And when I saw it, I just burst into tears. And my husband's looking at me. He's like, what's wrong? What's wrong? And I uncontrollably, I couldn't even talk. And he said, what is wrong? And I said, that painting. I said, that's exactly who I saw. That's who I spoke with.
Oh, wow.
And he said, the painting of Jesus, that's who it is. It's the painting of Jesus. I think she named it Prince of Peace. And she did this painting when she was young, 8, 10 years old, somewhere in there. I said, that's him. That's him. That's exactly who I saw, who I spoke with. Who communicated with me.
That's incredible.
It was mind-blowing. I was just stunned. Huh. And I had this experience before this girl was even born.
Right.
And that's what I saw. And I guess it was probably, I don't know, in the last 8 or 10 years, there was a young boy, and I don't know his name, I'd never researched it, but he died. He basically died. Mm-hmm. Something happened. And his father might have been a pastor in a church or something, or the family was very, they were very much a part of a church, of a congregation. Anyway, this little boy, he died, and he met Jesus, and supposedly, I don't know if this is true, but supposedly he saw the same man in the painting that this young artist did, and they ended up communicating together.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And I didn't even know this until like a month ago or so, because I wanted to find a picture that this on the internet that she had painted of Jesus. And so I looked her up and then found out that this little boy that had died and that had seen him, that they ended up communicating. They ended up making a movie of this little boy's experience. And I think it was something called Heaven is Real or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But so I wasn't the only one that had seen him.
Now that one I wonder about, because I thought for sure that there was some controversy surrounding that claim that that was made by the boy's family.
Right?
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't know enough about it, but I thought for sure that the little boy was kind of coerced to come up with that story and such. So I'm not saying that this isn't real. I'm sure what you experienced is very real, and I believe in it wholeheartedly. Unfortunately, you know, with anything, there's always those people trying to exploit exactly. something beautiful for personal gain, and that's unfortunate. That's really sad.
Yeah.
Now, I would like to touch on something that you said, because I had kind of an epiphany during the course of your discussion, and you were talking about being in the recovery room and looking at how muddy and confusing everything was. And the realization came to you that, my God, this is where we live. And
yes.
what occurred to me when you were saying that is like, yeah, because the point of this existence is not to learn to look outward. It's to learn to look inward.
Yes. Oh, that you're right. That's exactly it. Mm. That makes complete and total sense.
Yeah,
it really does. It really does. There was a book that I read after this experience. It wasn't immediately after. It was probably, I don't know, 10, 12 years after this experience. It was written by a woman that had something similar. It was called Embraced by the Light.
Mm.
And her last name, I think, was Edie. E-A-D-I-E, I think was her name. It's not a real long book.
Mm-hmm.
She actually has more detail, but a lot of what she describes is exactly what I experienced. And I know she's come under a lot of, a lot of fire too by people saying, oh, it wasn't real, wasn't real. But when I read her account, I think, yeah, there's so much that's very much identical, although she was able to retain more details, more knowledge of exchanges that she had on that side.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that occurred to me after I was back, it was like, why can't I remember the details?
I know. That's got to be maddening to have all of the answers and then to have none of them. Yeah. Wow.
Why can't I remember these details? And what I came up with is that when we're in a body, we have to process everything through organic organs.
Mm.
Our brain is organic. And, you know, our hearing, our eyesight, everything we perceive has to be filtered through this organic process, unless, you know, we have somehow accessed that part of ourselves that can escape that. And and maybe that's why everything was so much more real, and there was the ability to tap into full knowledge, was because I wasn't trying to process it through, you know, organic processes. And so it was just effortless.
Mm.
Because when I look back now, it's like I cannot remember detail.
Sure.
And it is frustrating because I wish I could.
Have you ever, I don't know, I don't even know if this would work or not, because you're right. There is a distinction in my mind between the spiritual presence and the physical presence. But I was thinking, I wonder if you could do a regression of hypnosis and recall more detail of what you experienced.
I've thought of that.
Okay.
And I think that I would probably be open to doing that. I really would, because it has crossed my mind before. When I start thinking about this, it's like, why can't I remember, especially with the number 9?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that was, other than the fact that just on a intuitive level,
mm-hmm.
it feels like the number 9 is representing a spiritual journey path.
Oh. Okay.
I don't know why.
Sure.
Because the path I'm on now is completely is diverged completely from where I was back then. And I had tried for a lot of years to take this experience and squish it down and put it in an Orthodox Christian type of theology, and it didn't fit.
Right.
Because I couldn't share it. I couldn't talk to people about it. I couldn't tell them that I think we're here to have a human experience.
Mm-hmm.
We're here having a human experience, but we're not. That's not the main part of who we are. We are a spiritual being choosing a human experience collaboratively with whatever has created us. That's what I really believe.
Yeah.
And that's not something that an Orthodox Christian community is wanting to hear. They don't want to hear that.
Sure.
They say that it's evil and not right. And so, you know,
I
finally got to the point where I'm like, I'm not going to try and squish it into that box anymore.
Yeah. And I think that part of the problem is in many observations of Christianity and other faiths, there needs to be a battle. There needs to be this war of sorts for the souls of all the believers, and it's this profound and fearful thing in many regards, because, you know, if you think you're always under attack and you always have an enemy that's trying to goof you up so you'll mm-hmm. lose your eternity, I mean, of course, you know, those people, and I'm not condescending to anybody or telling anyone what to believe or not to believe, but when you observe something so beautiful as your faith in such a divisive view, it's hard to appreciate the beauty of anything because you're at war, and that,
yeah.
I think that could be, you know, cause a lot of beauty to be missed throughout this journey.
And I believe that's true. I think exactly what you said is true. And also, one of the things, and I don't know why it's surrounding this number 9, is that there are going to be people, they need the constrictive confines of an Orthodox religion type
yes.
faith. They need that to be able to have faith and make it work for them. And when I was on the other side, it was almost as if that's fine. Whatever mm-hmm. someone needs to develop their spiritual path and to keep propelling them forward, it can all be used. For some people, it's going to be a point of attainment. They've attained this faith in this context with these restrictions, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are going to be those that use it as a stepping stone. They may start off, you know, as Catholic. They may start off as, you know, Orthodox Christian. They could start off in Mormonism. Who knows? They could start off in any of the major religions, and it could be a stepping stone to a further spiritual journey. I don't know. That's
right.
And somehow that's related to the number 9, and I don't know. I wish somebody could tell me.
Yeah.
I wish somebody could hear this and say, well, I think this is what the number 9 actually means.
Sure.
In that context, because I have no clue.
Have you looked into numerology and things like that to try to ascertain number 9s? Or?
I have a little bit, and I do know that in numerology, the number 9 represents completeness.
Okay.
And it was interesting because just recently there was a documentary on TV about Tesla. And he was saying that all of the universe, everything in the universe can be understood if people could understand the significance of 3, 6, and 9.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know what that, I don't know why, but I was thinking, well, the number 9 has 3 and 6 in it.
Sure, so that's true. That's very true. It is curious. And of course, I think that we are presented with symbols all the time throughout our journey here. And some people decipher them, some people miss them. And be that as it may, I just, you know, I don't know. And I think that symbols can be subjective too. So I think when you're thinking about this, whatever it means to you is probably the right thing. Like you seem to be pretty adept, you know, with discernment. in your own life. It sounds like you've had an incredible journey and have learned that. So, if something seems to make sense to you, regardless of whether anyone else has echoed that, I would hang on to that. But yeah, it is a curious thing. I don't know. I'm not a big symbols person, but I find them very interesting.
Yeah, I do too. And I find that after the experience, there were a lot of, I don't know if they call it paranormal or psychic or I don't even know what you would call it, but that kind of increased for me. Mm-hmm. And it continues to increase. Sometimes it's absolutely crazy. It's like, I will know someone's going to say something. I'll know exactly what they're going to say. I can repeat it before they say it. And that's happened a few times. It's random. I haven't harnessed it probably because I work so many hours and I've always got myself, at a computer screen, crunching numbers, doing spreadsheets. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But that does happen. And I did notice that after this out-of-body, near-death experience, that whole thing increased.
Right.
Which is kind of odd, but
sure.
Yeah. So
I found
it's very interesting.
I found this in a quick search. It says the nines energy is about giving, benevolent, and selfless. However, nines must not become doormats. Nines tend to have a harmonic understanding of people who are underprivileged and underdeveloped. At the same time, they share ideas with more advanced souls by learning and understanding the universal law of love and service. With the practice of humbleness, the nines can turn their passion into compassion. Nines tend to stress and tense quickly when they are trying to solve everyone else's problems.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
So I don't know if that resonates with you or not, but I thought I'd just take a look because I think those things are just really interesting.
Yeah, no, that does. I can relate to that for sure.
Wonderful.
Absolutely.
Well, your journey has been absolutely amazing.
It's interesting because I have wanted to have this experience again.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't been able to. I've had since this surgery, I've had three other surgeries. And one of them was remember I said that the anxiety and the irregular heartbeat was a thyroid condition. Well, I had to have thyroid surgery in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very complicated surgery because this piece of thyroid tissue that was actually half of my thyroid, one lobe, was in my chest, and it was compressing my aorta and collapsing my trachea, and it didn't even get found until I was rear-ended in an auto accident on Highway 50.
Oh, geez.
And it hurt my back, and so I ended up going to, I don't know if you want me to get into this quick story. It's not really long.
Oh, no, it's fine. Go ahead.
So I ended up going to the emergency the following day, and I'm like, my back hurts. I got rear-ended. It totaled my car. They hit me that hard.
Wow.
And so they said, well, we're going to do an X-ray, a CT scan. And I'm like, okay. And the doctor came back in. He goes, your back is fine. It's you're sore, you're bruised. You got hit pretty hard. It broke the seat in my car. That's how hard it hit.
Mm-hmm.
He said, but you have a mass in your chest that's huge. And I'm like, what?
No.
And he said, yeah. I said, we're going to do another CAT scan. I'm like, what do you think it is? He goes, oh, I don't want to say.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, I know why. You're worried it's something really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, my God, if this has to come out, it means another surgery. So they did it, and they did the CT scan. He comes back in. He said, very interesting. And I said, well, for you, but I said, I'm dying over here. What is going on?
Yeah.
He said, do you have a thyroid problem? And I said, I do. I said, it was literally just diagnosed in 2004, 5 years prior. They said that my thyroid was enlarged and that I needed medication. And so, I've been taking medication, so it's fine. He goes, yeah, well, no, it's not fine. And I said, why? He said, well, you have a goiter That's the size of a grapefruit, and it's collapsing your trachea, and it's compressing the aorta. It's obstructing blood flow.
Jeez.
And I said, oh, my gosh. He goes, you need surgery. And I said, well, are you sure? He goes, you're not going to survive if you don't have surgery.
Oh, my God.
He said, even if you, you know, say you passed out because you had no air, he said they couldn't even resuscitate you because it's too far deep into your chest.
Oh, man.
And I said, oh, my gosh. So, anyway, I ended up researching doctors that actually did that kind of surgery, and that was really difficult to find because it was complicated. And ended up getting the surgery done the following month. It was a six-hour surgery, and I knew it was going to be long, and there were two surgeons working on me, and they said, you know, we need to remove this this thyroid tissue. It's, you know, like invasive, and, you know, it's like a monster in your chest. And and so I'm thinking to myself, ooh, maybe I can have that experience again. I really wanted to. I really wanted to, now that I'm, you know, it was 20 some odd years past having the first one. It didn't happen. But the way that the whole thing surrounding the accident, when I was rear-ended, I was driving down 50. I was going into Sacramento. And I'm listening to the radio, and I'm just kind of going along. And all of a sudden, this thought, and I don't believe it was my thought. It was not like I heard an audible voice by any means, but it was like this thought popped into my head, you're going to be in an accident.
Hmm.
And I was like, where did that come from?
Yeah.
And I thought, and I don't think like that. That was the furthest thing from my mind. And I'm like, oh, that's really weird. Where did that come from? And I don't think that when I'm in a car. So I continue driving. There were those blinking billboard lights that said, you know, accident. And they named the street, you know, use caution. I'm like, see, wasn't me. That's exactly what I thought. It wasn't me.
Hmm.
I thought, but I'll be really careful. So I continue going. And now traffic is starting to back up because of that accident. And I'm in the middle lane. There's just three lanes wide. I'm in the middle lane, and it's kind of stop and go. And so we start going again, and then we come to kind of an abrupt stop. So I stop, and I look in my rearview mirror, and there's a, you know, this SUV, and they're still accelerating. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to get hit.
Geez.
And I did. And I couldn't avoid it.
Right.
That thought came back a second time before the accident actually happened, and it was, you're going to be in an accident and you will not be able to avoid it. And that's exactly what happened. And so I was like, wow, you know, that was crazy. And then the next day, when I, you know, wanted to go to the ER, because I thought, well, maybe I've injured something in my back, because it was really hurting.
Yeah.
And when I went, and when they did the CT scan and told me about this thing in my chest and all that, and sent me home, said, you know, find a surgeon, you need to take care of this. Once I got home, the pain in my back, like, left. And I was not taking any pain medication other than Tylenol, because pain medication upsets my stomach so bad.
Right.
And it was like, okay, well, where'd the pain go? It was enough pain to drive me to the emergency room, but once I was there and had the scan, now the pain is pretty much gone.
Oh, good. Well, that's nice.
I thought, well, okay, maybe that the whole purpose was to get me to discover this thing in my chest, and
right.
Know, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I wanted to have the experience again with that surgery. I didn't. So that's okay. Yeah.
Well, It's truly some amazing experiences you've had. And I'm just in awe of what you've experienced, what you've seen. At the same time, I don't think I'd want to repeat any of them, because, you know, it's, you don't know if it's the last journey or not, you know?
But exactly. Yeah, exactly true. Yeah. Yeah.
But I am just so honored and thrilled that you chose to share those here on the show with us. I just want to thank you so much for that.
Well, thank you, Brett. I really appreciate the opportunity to share my story and have others hear it. And you've been so gracious, and I really appreciate it.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure. And if anything else comes up, or any other paranormal experience for that matter, please come back and share that with us as well.
I certainly will. Thank you.
All right, Don. Well, thank you so much for being a part of the show. And again, I really thank you for the gift of what you've seen and experienced and sharing that with us all here. I think it'll touch a whole lot of people.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
All right. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
So thank you all for joining us tonight, and a special thank you again to Dawn for sharing all of her amazing experiences. It was just an incredible journey. I can't imagine what that must have felt like. I think it must have been nothing short of a miracle. But anyway, guys, I hope you all are doing wonderful out there. Thank you so much for being a part of the Paranormal Portal. If you enjoy the Paranormal Portal podcast, please head over to iTunes. Leave us a good review. It really goes a long way in getting the show recommended to new listeners out there who might be interested in the Paranormal Portal as well. Please follow us on Facebook. You can find us on facebook.com/paranormalportalradio. And if you love the podcast, you might want to check out our YouTube. We got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of shows over there where Don and I or me alone have been tearing it up over there for years. Give you a chance to see what goes into making a show or seeing it live. If that's your thing, we'd love to see you there. Please subscribe and hit the bell and leave us comments over there. That would be awesome. And we're also on Twitter, kind of. I mean, I'm kind of over there. I'm working on becoming a better tweeter, but I'd love to see you guys catch up with us over there, and that's at Paranormal Portal, P-O-R-T-L. So, love you guys so much. Thanks so much for making the podcast so successful and continuing to grow. You guys are absolutely phenomenal and amazing, and I love you bunches. But love you all. Be good, be kind, be nice. Take care of each other. Help each other out, find the magic in every day, and remember to laugh as much as you can. Take care, everybody. Thank you.
sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Barton, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.